I'm here with Jessica Hulsey-Nickel, founder of the Addiction Policy Forum here in Washington, D.C. Welcome, Jessica.
Thanks so much for having me.
Jessica, for those in the audience who are not familiar with Addiction Policy Forum, you or your work, can you give us a brief overview of the organization?
Yeah, absolutely. We started about 5 years ago, and we really wanted to bring everyone together to one table, patients and families, physicians, providers, researchers, scientists, all the key stakeholders to tackle this issue in a different way and really build a patient advocacy group. We also really believe in translating the science. Too many people understand this as a moral failing or a character flaw and not a health condition. And one of the best ways and easiest ways we can tackle that is to bridge that gap between what we know from research and science and how we talk about this to families, patients, to the public, and other stakeholder groups. So we really work closely to try to do that.
When you thought about this and doing this, is there a reason that you chose addiction rather than diabetes or cancer as a life mission?
Absolutely. I've been doing this work since I was 15, which is more years ago than I'm going to admit. And I lost both my parents to heroin use disorder. So I got involved in prevention first and then a lot of policy. And this is a disease that hit my family when I was very young. Addiction when I was a child meant homelessness and foster care. And then I was raised by my maternal grandparents. My mom did find a little several years in recovery, which was a gift. And my dad, unfortunately, never did. And I lost both of them way too soon. My dad was 48 and my mom was 50.
So that gives you a lot of motivation to make a difference in this area.
Yeah, it's our fire in our belly.
Thanks for sharing that. And I'm sorry about it, of course.
Thank you.
Wish that we could help people. And I guess you and your organization are trying to do just that.
Yeah, we are. When a disease strikes, it can feel a little bit like you're drowning and you don't know where to turn for help. And there's far too many people who can take advantage of families and patients who are vulnerable. And at the end of the day, we need people to find doctors. We need them to find physicians like you and a real plan and a treatment plan and not be taken advantage of. So that work is important to us. So many of us, the Add Addiction Policy Forum, we've been there firsthand. And we really want to sort of change what this whole experience is like when it does hit your family.
Thanks. Your work has focused a lot on addiction as being a brain disease.
Mm-hmm.
So is mine, from different points of view. But you're a great ally in that work and trying to get the word out. But there's a lot of resistance to that thought and the concept among health providers and people in policy. Have you made any progress there?
I think we have. We've tried to sort of take the science, and brain science is complicated, and particularly if you're a family member, you're in crisis when you're usually seeking information. So learning is a little trickier when you're in crisis. You're sort of our typical time when we're helping people and we find folks are in the middle of the night on a Sunday or Monday. So something just happened that weekend and then you have a worried mom or dad who's on the keyboard and searching for help and answers. So we really try to take the science and boil it down to little snack packs that you can consume in one sitting. And we really need to work with researchers and scientists, physicians, providers, the experts to teach us so then we can teach others. And not just patients and families, but also whether it's folks in healthcare, because we need to make sure that we're nuancing this. It's criminal justice stakeholders, educators, teachers, principals, school counselors. There's a lot of folks that need to understand this information. And what we've discovered in some of our testing of the brain science pieces is that when you're teaching how this affects the body, how it affects the brain, you're secretly building empathy and compassion. So you understand why there's changed behaviors, why there's changed priorities. We don't always have the most well-behaved patient population, and there's a reason for that, and that's built into how it affects the brain. And so if we take the time to meet people where they are, not just our patients, but every stakeholder group that has contact with folks who are struggling with this disease, you could really see a change on how we interact with them.
It's not only your work in educating the public and policymakers about addiction being a brain disease and what we can do about it. But you've been thinking a lot about raising the bottom. You know, there used to be a notion, I kind of go back in the field to the early 70s, that you had to wait for somebody to hit bottom.
Yeah.
How are you trying to change that?
So we have a video explainer, an animated explainer series that takes some of the, whether it's the brain science or explaining severity and levels of severity, or this notion of rock bottom and other myths that we have when it comes to the disease of addiction. And rock bottom, so much of this comes from a really easy thing for us to point to when we are just feeling very uncomfortable about discussing someone's alcohol or substance use. It's uncomfortable. I work in this field, and I find it uncomfortable to talk to a girlfriend or a colleague or a peer about alcohol, their alcohol use or their marijuana use or any sort of drug use. It's uncomfortable and it's awkward, and you don't know how to start. And we have these, oh, it's not my business, or wait for it to run its course, wait for their rock bottom, something's going to happen. But the reality is, addiction gets worse over time. Like most other health conditions. So waiting for it to get worse, to sort of get more severe, to have more consequences, not just physically, but also employment on personal relationships, whether it's your family system or your friend system, your support network that you need. The longer we wait to engage, the harder it can be, and sometimes the more difficulty on the recovery process. So we try to teach people about like using their levers. So if you think about a person who's struggling with this disease, and so many folks that we work with, they talk about the cop or the judge that mm-hmm. engaged with them, and they kind of pulled the lever. They sort of gave them that reason, or sort of that the carrot and stick approach to figure out a new path and to give them some options. But there's so many more levers that usually we come in contact with before we are arrested or lose a job or have something of serious consequence be our rock bottom. It's a failed relationship. You're in trouble mm-hmm. with your spouse, your boyfriend, your girlfriend. You've gotten in trouble at school. Your parents want to engage. So if we do a better job of teaching people how to use their levers, and engage with that person in a kind and loving way to say, I'm worried about you. Can we talk about your drinking? Can we talk about your drug use? I'm here to get you help. And we teach people to approach it that way. We can see a process of intervening sooner and having better health outcomes.
You know, we did a lot of work in the area of physician health and physician addictions, and
yeah.
we had to do that. And
yeah.
actually, in my group, Lisa Merlo, a researcher, showed that physicians who were coerced or helped into treatment early did just as well, if not better, than those who came to treatment after an accident or after
yes.
an infectious disease or after
yep.
some tragedy at work. So there's evidence on the side of your idea of lifting the bottom. There's not much evidence on the side of waiting till someone gets hepatitis C or
yeah.
HIV.
Yeah, or an overdose.
Or an overdose.
Yeah.
You think about the overdose data.
Yeah.
I mean, the average person is overdosed multiple times.
Absolutely.
You think one would be enough.
Yeah. And I think with sort of a fentanyl in mm-hmm. in the mix, the risk for a fatality is so high that I think we just really need to tackle some of our outdated preconceived notions like rock bottom. And teach people, and it's employers. I love the Physicians Health Program, and I think employers can play such an important role, because you know, losing your job or having difficulties in your job is one of the first indicators of a worsening mm-hmm. substance use disorder. So giving your manager, your boss, the companies, folks that employ individuals, the lever mm-hmm. and the training to use that better could really sort of arrest this disease, stop it in its place before it worsens.
So there's a new paper that came out about people with opioid use disorder and how if they have Medicaid coverage or no coverage, they can't really find help very well.
Yeah.
And did you see that paper?
I did. It's worrisome. We know that we have significant barriers to accessing medication-assisted treatment. And the fact that the type of coverage that you have, or having no insurance or ability to pay, can really, you know, further limit. We know this, and we're hearing this on the ground, but it's very concerning because the costs are high. When someone is reaching out, needing MAT for an opioid use disorder, the stakes are very high, and any barriers or difficulties that we're throwing in their way to accessing mm-hmm. care, to finding a physician to help them manage this very serious health condition, you know, is putting lives at stake and families really vulnerable. So we're very concerned about it.
Yeah, no, I think it surprised people because we thought we'd made so much progress in the number of providers, the number of prescribers, the number of waivers granted. But if you ask people who have a waiver and who do provide buprenorphine, for example, if you're a patient with Medicaid or no insurance, they may not be available for you, even though they have slots.
Yeah, that's very true. I think that we know that for our communities, our patients and families that come from, that don't have a lot of economic means, we see vastly different recovery outcomes. Mm-hmm. So we have a disparity on what's available to folks based on sort of what community they come from.
Yeah.
And tackling that is really important.
The Addiction Policy Forum has an award program called Innovation Now that recognizes novel addiction programs in the community, and the idea being that they can be models for others. One of your Innovation Now awardees is my friend and colleague, Dr. Jim Berry, whose COAT program was featured here, right here, by CME Outfitters in a webcast in October.
That's great.
And the feedback that the doctors that watched him gave us was tremendous.
Yeah.
Many of them saying that his model program and the ingredients of that program were so well stated and articulated in this presentation that they could just adopt it just after listening to him.
So I
wanted to know what other programs you might have, other examples of programs that you've recognized that are novel and impactful and that would be of interest to the people watching us.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we love the COAT program and Dr. Berry's work. He's quite a leader in this field and an inspiration. A few of the programs in the healthcare lane that I think are truly innovative and we would love to see replicated and scaled up. One is Aware Recovery Care. We know that there are, is lots of different difficulties with barriers to accessing treatment. And a big one is if you're in a rural community, mm-hmm. if you don't have enough providers, if you don't have access to transportation, it can be really tricky. So it started in Connecticut and has expanded from there. But Aware Recovery Care takes the visiting home nurse model mm-hmm. and applies that to treating substance use disorders. So they don't have one sort of brick and mortar place where you have to sort of come to one center and it's in one, you know, community and estate. They send the nurses out, and the nurses are sort of the hub of an entire team, a multidisciplinary team that works with the entire family, including a marriage and family counselor, MAT access, if you have an opioid use disorder or an alcohol use disorder, and all these other components that the family needs. Addiction is a family disease, mm-hmm. And so having the interventions and the support to all the different members of the family that are impacted by the illness is super effective. The results from this in terms of retention and recovery rates among patients is really impressive, and I love how they've approached this, and they've used another model that we've seen in sort of high-risk OBGYN patient mm-hmm. groups that we've used home visitation and then applied it to another high-risk population with great results. And the other two that I really love, we know that if you've had an opioid use or an opioid overdose, that you have a greater a chance of having another one mm-hmm. and a fatality. But there's been, you know, very different types of interventions or lack of interventions that we see in emergency departments. And there's lots of, I think, gaps in the services mm-hmm. and resources that we've provided to the ED. So the Mosaic Group in mm-hmm. Baltimore sort of came up with a solution, and they've implemented in over 11 hospital systems in Baltimore. So they begin buprenorphine treatment mm-hmm. on the same day of an overdose or mm-hmm. someone being screened for an opioid use disorder, and then they have a hot handoff mm-hmm. to a provider that they've already linked up mm-hmm. to the very next morning or even the same day. They have a recovery coach that is deployed to the emergency department to work with that person, and if the patient elects not to engage in treatment that day, they follow up with them for 90 days, and we see interest and engagement that happens as a result of that follow-up care. And the last one that I really love is Moms in Recovery, which comes out of Dartmouth. They were doing looking at prenatal care and prenatal visits for pregnant moms who were also undergoing treatment for opioid use disorder, and they were seeing a lot of appointments being missed for prenatal care. And then after talking to their patients, they realized there were so many different places you had mm-hmm. to go to. All these prenatal visits here. I have to go to the opioid treatment program for my medication here. And they brought it together, Dr. Julie Frew, in one place. And have even added extra services, like you can get diapers, and there's a food pantry, and there's like a support network mm-hmm. that really exists, and recovery support for these moms. And I love how they sort of tackled. I think they started with 5 moms that were initially providing services, and it has expanded greatly, and lots of compassion and care, and really meeting patients where they are, so you can see those recovery milestones met.
That's great.
Yeah.
Thanks for reviewing them for us, and
yeah.
I'll look for them. Can I find them on your website?
Yep, we have overviews of all of our Innovation Now Award winners, over 56 programs so far we've identified, and it's at addictionpolicy.org.
Thanks. Well, thank you for coming in. I know how busy you are. And
thanks for having me.
You know, a life's mission like this, there's probably very little time for sleep, let alone be here with us at CME. But thank you for coming.
Well, thank you for having us. Really appreciate it.